Welcome to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Network. Now your host, Jason Miller.
Welcome to the show. Today I'm playing an excerpt from a recent panel discussion on health IT and data that I moderated for FCA Bethesda. My guests on the panel were Soweta Ladwa, the Chief of the Scientific Solutions Delivery Branch at the National Institutes of Health, Kate Weatherby, the Acting Director for the Marketplace Innovation and Technology Group in the Center for Consumer Information and Insurance Oversight in the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, and Neelu Kundugrami, the Chief Data Officer for the Advanced Research Projects Agency Health in the Department of Health and Human Services. First, we hear from Soweta Ladwa from NIH.
I support data science efforts at the National Heart, Lung, Blood, and Sleep Institute, NHLBI, at the NIH. And we have been working for many years now to support big data availability for reuse in the cloud. And so currently we have an ecosystem called Biodata Catalyst that it's looking to democratize access to data as well as computational resources in the cloud. There's currently about 4 petabytes of data in there. We have, it's a multimodal data resource. So we have clinical and genomics data primarily. We're looking at very quickly expanding that to imaging and other data types as well. In the next 6 months, I would say, so very in the near future. So we're really looking to provide a free and accessible resource to the research community to be able to really advance scientific outcomes and therapeutics, diagnostics, whatever they might be, to benefit the public health and outcomes of Americans and really people all over the world. And so to do this, it takes a lot of different skills, expertise, different entities, and so it's a partnership between a lot of different people to make this resource available to the community. We're also part of the larger NIH data ecosystem, so we participate with other NIH institutes and centers that provide cloud resources, including NCI, NHGRI, NICHD, and others, and that's part of the NIH Cloud Platform interoperability effort. We're able to do this because we have wonderful leadership at NIH in the Office of Data Science and Strategy, ODSS, that's been negotiating rates with cloud vendors, some of which are in the room today, so that we can provide these cloud storage free of cost to the community at a discounted rate to the institute. So even if folks are using the services for computational purposes, they're able to actually leverage and take benefit from the discounts that have been negotiated by the NIH with these cloud vendors. So we're really happy to be working with this, with multi-cloud vendors, be able to pass some savings on to really advance science. But it takes a lot of effort across many entities to make this happen. And so we're really looking to continue that effort and expand the capabilities with some of the newer technologies that have been kind of buzzing this year, like generative AI, things like that, and really provide those resources back to the community to advance the science. So,
a couple things just kind of occur to me. You talked about expanding, and I think the insinuation probably is the better data analytics tools, better potentially, obviously, we all love to talk about AI. How does that expansion work? Is it a let's create a sandbox? Is it someone brings you a tool? Can you talk through what that maybe would look like for you all to say, hey, that's a tool we want to add to our tool set, toolbox?
Yeah, sure. So, the tools that are of primary interest are those that are associated with data types. So for imaging data, for example, we want to be able to leverage or build in tooling that's associated with machine learning, because that's what imaging researchers are primarily looking to do, is they're trying to process these images to gain insights. And so tooling associated with machine learning, for example, is something we'd want to be part of the ecosystem, which we're actively actually working to incorporate. So a lot of tooling is associated with data types, but it could be workflows, pipelines, apps that help the researchers, really meet their use cases. And those use cases are all over the place because there's just a wealth of data there. There's so much that can be done. And so we really look to our communities of practice to give us their insight. So the development that we do in the ecosystem is really based on the feedback from the user communities and saying, hey, we want this thing. And so we take that feedback and it's a feedback loop. We put that into our development cycle and then that gets pushed out into our resources. And so we are very much user driven. And so the tooling, the data, it's all based on what the community is requesting and that they want access to.
So hopefully lots more questions about tools coming up, and they'll want to know much more. But we're going to move over to Kate from CMS.
I work for the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid. I work in the Marketplace Innovation and Technology Group. So on the other side, I really support operations at this point. My background is clinical, and so most of my background was in the clinical space. That's where we have kind of known each other. But for the past 7 years, we've really been focused on how do we use data to improve performance, and how do we use data to improve a consumer experience. And so moving the data for research and moving into a longitudinal healthcare is extremely important. But on the flip side, for those of us who are really focused into the technology, it's looking at the way that we're holding that data. How are we curating it? What does it mean? Do we have all of the data sources and the data streams so that we can really understand it and we can use it to make our websites and our user experience and all of that work better? It's really important for us that when somebody comes in on the insurance side, which is where we are, is that they really feel like they have a good experience. They can understand what the market looks like. They can walk through everything very clearly. We want your grandmother to be able to correctly buy insurance and not feel overwhelmed by the experience. And so we spend quite a bit of time looking at our data, again, to make sure that we take all of the data that we have from prior years and we use that for performance analytics to make sure that while we are during open enrollment and while we're doing insurance for people, that our systems are up and running and that there's access. And then the other thing is that we spend a lot of time using Google Analytics, using different types of testing fields to make sure that the way that we're asking questions or how we're getting information from people makes a ton of sense. And so moving from kind of that clinical place into how a website works, how operation works, and how we take that into, you know, that full suite of services, I think that it's really important. I mean, because even on the research side, it's really important that we start focusing on how we're holding that data, how we're asking the questions, so that, you know, bad data in, bad data out, right? We want to move to generative AI. We want to have the opportunity to do chatbots. We want to have the opportunity to do a number of these things. That means that we have to really understand the data that we're getting. We have to understand why we're asking those questions, what is the relationship between all of that data, and how we can kind of improve, you know, what that length of data looks like. Because, you know, we have some data that's a little older and we're not, you know, you've got to look at that and be like, does that really fit into the use cases and where we want to go with, you know, the future work. So we spend a lot of time really thinking about, at CMS as a whole, thinking about our data and how we're curating the data, how we know what that's used for, because as we all know, data can be manipulated in any way that you want. So we want it to be really clear. We want it to be really usable. Because again, when we start talking in the future and we talk about generative AI, or we talk about chatbots, or we talk about predictive analytics, it is so easy for a computer, if the data's not right or if the questions aren't right, to really not get the outcome that you're looking for. So kind of on that flip side, we're really focused on how do we help improve that and improve that user experience and then share that information across the federal government.
I think it makes a lot of sense when you talk about understanding the data. So, but you have a lot of data. I mean, I think Sweta mentioned 4 petabytes. I would only imagine you're somewhere in there too. How do you do that? Like, give me maybe, do you have an example or a use case that maybe is a recent one that you can you talk a little bit about how do you use that data versus just say we have to use it better?
Part of it is getting back to the business, right? How do we train the business why the data is so important? Because I'm a technologist. Well, technically I'm a clinician. I'm a therapist. Somehow I got into this job. But
many ways.
See, I got to laugh.
Data.
at the end of the day, the business has to be able to explain to us. We spend quite a bit of time working with our business partners and working with our policy people and having people like me. I came from the policy side, right? And so we spend a lot of time talking back and forth. What does this mean? What do you want to use it for? And so when we talk about curated data, it's not just about, you know, from a technology point, oh, well, I know what fields these are and that this needs to go here and this needs to go here. It's really understanding what the business and the policy wants from that data so we can kind of tie it all together, you know, have it well tagged, have it well documented so that, because the, really the problem is if you're not really understanding it at the point of time that you're getting it in, then, you know, 10 years from now, you're gonna be like, why do I have this data, right? So it's really being thoughtful about it at the beginning and then spending the time year over year to see if it's something you should still be holding or not.
We have to take a break. Today, I'm playing an excerpt from a recent panel discussion on health IT and data that I moderated for FCA Bethesda. I'm Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Network. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Network. I'm your host, Jason Miller. Today, I'm playing an excerpt of a recent panel discussion on health IT and data that I moderated for FCA Bethesda. My guests on that panel were Sweta Ladwa, the Chief of Scientific Solutions Delivery Branch at the National Institutes of Health, Kate Weatherby, the Acting Director for the Marketplace Innovation and Technology Group at the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, and Neelu Kundagarami, the Chief Data Officer for the Advanced Research Project Agency Health in the Department of Health and Human Services. For this segment, first we hear from Neelu Kundagarami from ARPA-H, and then the panelists take audience questions.
We are actually from the strategy side, right? ARPA-H, as my role, I have both internal data and external data. External data means clinical data. And on clinical data, we are talking about healthcare data, life science data, claims data, potentially eligibility data, right? We all, you know. So what we are doing, right? You know, our strategically, our position is actually enable sharing, data sharing. Because we are getting into a position where we are generating petabytes worth of data, hundreds of petabytes worth of data, and we do not have the enough network bandwidth to bring this data to it in one place. And maintaining the security, privacy, all, and enable generate insight from it. So how could we enable sharing where the data is and basically generate the insight and basically use that insight from it to identify what the opportunities exist. So we just have Biodata Fabric. There is a proposal going on, actually, BDF toolbox. That is one work. So the other thing we are working on is that how do we identify biases? How do we make sure that the data, our data has, how do we identify where the data needs to be adjusted? So underrepresented populations, we can identify it and correct it. The third is obviously that if you look into, in general, the data landscape, we generate a lot of data, but only 50% of structured data we use for analytics, understanding it. And then 1% of unstructured data we use for. So we have a huge opportunity to basically dig deep into the data. And I hear Kate very loud and clear, the data, when you bring it, if you don't identify your quality problem, and I'll talk about that, we are working on it. So can we expand that? Can we use so that we don't have to, like a, we are looking into a much bigger percent of the unstructured data using it for our analytics. This is high level strategically we are working on it. Tactically, my team right now, we are working on our internal data to start generating insight. That's one thing we are doing. Second is we have a generative AI team. We have been working on, I think, retrieve augmented generation with knowledge graph, knowledge base. We had something ready for probably internally. And then data engineering side, this is, we are still thinking about how we are going to approach it, that how we could create a situation where we have quality of the data, the point of the data is getting entry, we know, and we do auto remediation. The problem with my experience, what I found out, if you ask business owner, can you go tell us what is right or wrong? They will not do it. They will do it first time, second time, and they will not do it. But that's an opportunity. Can I use that knowledge to a self-supervised model, and the model learn? And generative AI, the beautiful thing is, it can generate. So can I use a self-supervised automatic AI-based data cleansing and remediation. Second is, can I create data catalog? Because data catalog, any data fabric asks for data cataloging, but creating data catalog is pretty challenging. Can I create data catalog automatically? How do I know my lineage of the data? And how do I harmonize the data? Because there are various data standards, and I cannot tell somebody, okay, follow these. So that area, we are also started working on the governance, creating a effective governance framework, which people don't hate, and they just say that, okay, they will be participating in it. Because anytime you talk to governance, they say, it's like a security people, right? That another area we are working on. So we are working on several areas.
All right, now we're going to get to your questions. I have one follow-up question for you. I just want to make sure that I understood it correctly. Are you guys starting to dip your toe into generative AI? Or were you with that? Because I think
pretty good, actually. You know, so we have multiple things going on. We are deep into toe in the generative AI in the sense that we are not creating models, but we are basically taking models, and then we are doing the fine-tuning. Now, quote-unquote, because when you talk fine-tuning, we are not doing a transfer learning. What we are doing is actually, let me give you an example. A model normally is like let's say 6 months old. In that 6 months, there are a lot of data has been generated. How do you tell that model what that data? And the standard protocol for this is called retrieval augmented generation. So basically, you take the model, you vectorized it, and then put it through the model. Take that data, vectorize it, put it through the model. That's how we are doing it. And we actually, I'm not going to explain what we did, but we basically vectorized a pretty big data sets for our internal work.
Let's open up the floor to questions. Here we go. Quentin's.
Hi, good morning, everybody. My name is Quintus Brown. I'll speak a little later. I'm the VP of Health IT for AFSIA Bethesda, and we're really excited to have you guys here. Just a really quick question, because everybody's talking about AI, and the thing I'm curious about is the OMB memo that came out to the agency heads around using AI, specifically around governance, around advancing innovation, but particularly around managing risk in the data and in procurement. So I'm just curious how your agencies are addressing the OMB memo. I know some agency heads think it's big enough to drive a truck through because spell check could be considered Gen AI. So just curious where your agencies are falling on the OMB memo and how you plan to implement it.
And I'll jump in. It's a draft memo. Just want to make sure that. We'll give them the ability to defer the question to say, it's draft.
Well, I mean, I can talk through CMS. We obviously take AI in general very seriously. At the CMS level, we're forming a data lake to, you know, pull in data from all of the different centers and offices that we have across the organization. But it is very new. And so where we're at is really, as I said before, it's really looking at that curated data. It's also putting the governance around it, because realistically, just like clinical data, we have claims data, right? We have a lot of data that we do not want to share, and it's our responsibility to ensure the security and privacy of the American people and the data that they've shared with us. And so I think that a lot of it is having the conversations, because when you start talking about the agency level, I work in a center within the agency, and I don't want to share my data with anyone else. I'll just say that. And every other center feels the same way, because I know my data, and I don't think anyone else will know it. You know, but that's what the business owners want to say, and I know that that's what we hear a lot of. And so I really think that some of it is being able to break down the barriers of, no, really, sharing this data is great. But then part of it is also understanding, and I keep coming back to the use cases, but it's really important, because if you don't know what you want to build with AI, you can just build anything. And so understanding the use cases and what's going to be most important for our agency to move forward and really help the way that we serve people is what's going to help us drive the policy that we put together to make this successful. I think that we're probably all going to say, I would assume that most agencies are going to have very similar governance and security and privacy and all of that stuff. But I mean, we're talking, you know, research data, when it's de-identified and like you can get to claims data, the same thing. I'm sure that none of you would want your claims data shared broadly.
Agreed. Like, you know, we the data that we have is controlled access for a reason, because the privacy of the participants in research is utmost importance. We want to make sure that their consents are upheld and that the data is used in accordance with what they consented to at the time of their participation in the study. In reading, I think, parts of the memo, it's long, 40 pages? I don't know. What's that? 25. Well, yeah. So, I mean, there's a lot of infrastructure that's mentioned there, like chief data officers being enacted across, you know, in 6 months or something, and across all the agencies. And so it's a lot of stuff that's still in flight. But I think the really nice thing about it is that there's recognition that there is a need for us to place an importance on the data, and that there's support in the memos that have come out in that light, so that we can use data responsibly, and while making sure that privacy and other considerations are upheld, and acknowledging the risk. So it's really, I think, it's a step in the right direction. We're going to learn from things as we implement these changes and embrace data as a first class citizen in this in the landscape. But there's a lot to learn. So there's can't really predict what's going to happen today. But maybe some of the generative AI can help us to do that. I don't know.
Before you jump in, let me maybe try to put a finer point on Quintus's question. What's the governance like today? Because I think what a lot the memo is talking about is telling agencies to do something that they probably already are doing, but maybe turn it up a notch or add more accountability, authority, oversight over whatever they're doing. So, Nilu, you can answer it any way you want, but maybe that the bigger question for what you're getting to is, what's the governance today and how is it potentially going to change?
For the OMB memo, we are actually working on what is our policy would be. You know, within our team, several leadership team members are involved. We are also working with the HHS to set up that how we are going to adjust. But for us right now, we are still working on our governance framework, right? On our governance framework. So right now, one of the things we spoke about that, we talked about that, how do we reduce the risks or biases as we will have different performers. How do you make sure that the AIs, at the same thing, the model that will be developed cannot be used for other ill purposes, right? So we have been talking, we are setting up some boundaries, some framework, but it's a work in progress, actually.
We have to take a break. Today, I'm playing an excerpt from a recent panel discussion on health IT and data that I moderated for FCA Bethesda. I'm Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Network. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Network. I'm your host, Jason Miller. Today, I'm playing an excerpt of a recent panel discussion on health IT and data that I moderated for FCA Bethesda. My guests on that panel were Sweta Ladwa, the Chief of Scientific Solutions Delivery Branch at the National Institutes of Health, Kate Weatherby, the Acting Director for the Marketplace Innovation and Technology Group at the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, and Nilu Kundagarami, the Chief Data Officer for the Advanced Research Project Agency Health in the Department of Health and Human Services. For this segment, the panelists continue to take audience questions.
My name is Dave Picassi. I'm with Talis TCT. My question revolves around how you interact with the CISO's team. Your data is so massive. Do you assume that it's being taken care of, or do you get into an active role in making sure that everything's secure, we know who's putting data in, we know who's seeing this data, or is it, okay, that's their job over there? Just expand on that a little bit.
No, we are very involved, actually. It's CISO's team and us, my team. At the end of the day, it is also my responsibility to make sure that the data are protected. So it's kind of the way, CISOs come with the policy, the framework, they're expert on it. But we also understand data security. We understand that, okay, how to protect our data in a multi-domain environment. And, the security is something which doesn't start from the top, right? The when you architect your infrastructure, when you bring your data, and that's the point, it starts thinking from the bottom up, right? So what we do is actually we start our engineers, basically, we start thinking about the security from the start point. And then also, from the CISO's basically team, they looked into it, okay, overall, and they also come up with the policies and all those things. It's kind of a converge both directions.
Something that what Kate was saying about the business side, if you want to jump in there, because when you're sitting at the table and talking about how do we use this data, how do we look at user experience, there's a cyber piece to it. Is the CISO, the cybersecurity folks sitting at the table with you?
Yes.
Imagine the answer is yes. Is there anything more you want to expound upon, or is it just for Kate? For Kate.
I mean, I think that, well, but I think it's exactly what you're saying. Like, we don't, I am never going to just be like, oh, they'll take care, you know, it's my data at the end of the day. You know, those of us who work on these projects feel very passionate about what we're doing, right? And it's our data. Like, I'm going to own that data, and I want to safeguard it, and I want to make sure that it's okay. Security and the privacy becomes easier. I mean, I think the governance is much harder, and making sure that what these things come out to say is correct. But, like, from us, whenever we're building a system or whenever we're looking at anything, we start at the exact same place. You have to have security involved in the beginning. Because the security team, in my mind, the security team needs to understand what we're looking for at the outcome, right? Because I don't want them to come in at the end and then not understand. So with them being there and being part of the whole build system, they understand where we're going, what we're doing, and how they can better safeguard our systems so that, you know, we're protected.
Yeah, no, we're meeting with our CISO, you know, almost like daily, I'd say, you know, because there's so many data intensive programs that are maybe not yet, you know, reflected in our ecosystems, but are coming online soon. We have systems that are coming online to help support the access of various data in the cloud, you know, that provide analytic capabilities. So there's a lot of concern over governance and security. So the CISO is definitely at the table. You know, it's bottom-up approach, exactly as Nila said, that we have to all be thinking about it along the way. It starts at, you know, the data sources, the people who are generating this data from NIH funding, you know, making sure that they are appropriately handling the data before they send it to us, and we're conducting QC again. You know, is this data de-identified? Is there any risk? Are the tools, you know, at the security controls that are necessary for accessing this data? So it's all part of the conversation every step of the way, and so, you know, there's multiple checks, and governance is a really critical component to what we do at the NIH as well.
And Sweta, you have the additional challenge because you're dealing with academics, you're dealing with nonprofits who may not have that inherent cybersecurity understanding, money to support it, or academics are well known just to put it out there, let it bloom.
Yeah.
So we have another question. Tell them who you are.
Hi, I'm Kathleen Coles, Deepwater Point and Associates. So I have a sort of a, let's look out where the hockey puck is going. And that has to do with the convergence and the intersection in IoT devices. So think about all our health data. Think about Dick Cheney in the past as pacemaker, and you want to collect data. And now you have to go to the cloud, but the cloud is maybe you want to go to the edge. And I'd just like to hear how you think about IoT and where we're headed and what you might be doing in pilots that people could be bidding on to participate in and what we're going to do as a community to get ahead of the curve. Thank you.
I think at the NIH, we call them, you know, it's kind of termed mobile health. It's kind of mobile devices like Fitbits and things like that, pacemakers, other items. There's tons of ways to collect that data. I think, you know, we're able to share that data, again, within the confines of the consent of the individuals who, you know, shared that data. But, you know, I think ultimately we don't want to just put data out there without the tooling that you would need to analyze that data appropriately, like, you know, or even the metadata to understand what device this came from, the provenance of it, you know, just the background in order to understand that data. And so there's a lot of infrastructure that needs to be put in place to be able to support all the various devices that might be providing data, you know, that we could use for research. And so there's definitely a wealth out there, but there, the infrastructure to use that data is equally important. So that's something that we're looking to actively support. We do have mobile health data coming from various programs like the NIH Recover program, which is the post-acute sequelae of COVID. It's tracking, you know, long COVID. across the country. And so we're looking to integrate mobile health data that's coupled with EHR data, for example. But we really want to make sure that that data is meaningful in the long term, because right at the end of, you know, once that data collection effort is over and the study is over, the legacy is the data. And so we want to make sure that that data is really optimized for reuse and in long term. And that includes the data being good data, but the tooling to support that.
I don't have clinical data in my program, but I can talk about CMS as a whole. So if you look at CMMI and you look at CCSQ, which is our quality standards group, they are moving to e-clinical quality measures. And so what we found over time, as we're trying to move into that longitudinal health record, right, we spent quite a bit of time working on electronic health records and trying to get all of the data that we need into electronic health records. And yet that interoperability still isn't completely there. And so, you know, if you're looking at places for CMS, I can say CCSQ and CMMI, I don't know what they have out right now. But what we're looking at is beyond just the electronic health data, or the health record, how do we use all of these Internet of Things, and how do we create that longitudinal health record for a patient where they can look at things over time? It's really important that, you know, we don't just look at the care that was provided at that fee-for-service place, but we look at the care that's provided across everything. You think about if you go and get a vaccine at CVS, you know, that can come right into your electronic health record now because of the way that the data is shared. You look at some of the newer models that's out there, and I'm going to speak about Amazon really quick because I was just at their conference, but their One Health, they did an overview of the app that they're putting together, and you know, right in there they have chatting with their physician, and they're sharing blood pressure records with their physician, and they're sharing things immediately. So if we think about the future of healthcare, and we think about the future of way that we can provide care in a better way, and look at the social determinants of health and health equity and bringing that all together so a patient really feels like they are getting the care that they deserve, because a lot in health equity people aren't feeling like they're getting that care at the time that they need it, I think that we do need to look across all of the different ecosystems we have. Like, how can we bring all of this data together? How can we look across everything a patient is doing and really, you know, put that into a record so that a primary care provider has a good way of saying, oh my God, maybe you could have diabetes. Maybe you're on the verge of something else, right? And we start thinking about whole health, and we start thinking about preventive health versus just like a fee for service. That's my pitch.
IoT actually brings challenges and a huge opportunity. So the challenges, why? Obviously, you have now constantly coming data are coming to you, and in general, I got a feeling that the real way we'll be able to work on the data is actually de-identifying it, so remove that security and privacy. Now, your IoT data, you have to make sure that you are de-identifying it, but still maintaining the longitudinal records. So that way, when you are running the analytics, you could really generate the proper analytics. Other challenge would be the data volume will grow. Excuse me. Now, what is the opportunity? Yesterday, I was talking to a leading researcher on health data. This kind of data also can give us the opportunity. Can I predict some illness before it happens? I know the blood pressure is there, but is there something on the blood pressure or some information on that longitudinal data which can predict a pancreatic cancer potential case? Early prediction, or Alzheimer's early prediction, or a rare disease. So it's a huge opportunity. As I said, you know, we are only doing 1% of unstructured data processing. As we start going deep into it, we'll say that, you know, it's a big, big opening for us.
We have to take a break. Today I'm playing an excerpt from a recent panel discussion on health IT and data that I moderated for FCA Bethesda. I'm Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Network. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Network. I'm your host, Jason Miller. Today, I'm playing an excerpt of a recent panel discussion on health IT and data that I moderated for FCA Bethesda. My guests on that panel were Sweta Ladwa, the Chief of Scientific Solutions Delivery Branch at the National Institutes of Health, Kate Weatherby, the Acting Director for the Marketplace Innovation and Technology Group at the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, and Neelu Kundugarami, the Chief Data Officer for the Advanced Research Project Agency Health in the Department of Health and Human Services. For this final segment, the panelists continue to take audience questions.
Okay, Zhen Xiao from Leidos. So much of the attention right now is on the use case and the marketize of the data and how to use the data. But I felt the data standard development is a very important topic, not just related to the use, but also the governance framework. So with that, I want to see if you can comment on the government's effort on data standard development, specifically, who is actually driving this process? Is that, for example, for HHS, is ONC driving, or is bottom-up approach at different institutes and different agencies?
This is a huge thing that we're doing at the Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute. So we recognize that, you know, standards are really important for the data. And we have multimodal data, everything from EHR data that ONC has established, really worked with the standards community like HL7 and others to establish standards like the Fast Healthcare Interoperability Resources FHIR. So there are established standards for various data types. And so it's not like a one-size-fits-all that we can use this data. On the other hand, in the research communities, there's kind of de facto standards that communities use. They're not maybe vetted with standards organizations, but they are what is used for a specific data type in the research community. So what we're doing at the NHLBI is we've actually stood up a data management core that's looking to establish, you know, what are the guidelines for sharing data at bare minimum, you know, minimal metadata, specific standards for established data types, and really providing that guidance back to the community. So it's not an endorsement of any standard or framework, but really to provide guidance to the community to say, hey, if you're going to share this data, it should, you know, align to a standard from maybe, you know, a list or whatever, like clinical data. OMOP is kind of like a de facto standard for certain use cases. And so, but it may not be the best standard for all use cases. And so, you know, just being, having the data generators really be the decision maker in terms of what standards to align to. But the goal is to get the community using standards for the data that they're collecting so that the data can be used, you know, in a more interoperable and harmonized kind of manner when you're looking at multimodal data especially. And you know, metadata is really important to that kind of multimodal kind of data interoperability.
And just a quick follow-up, this, you mentioned data management group. Is this NIH, NLIB, or is it broader? Is it include industry? Any more you can give us?
It's an award that was made to RTI. So they're the prime as the data management core. But they're really looking to ensure that the data that's coming into Biodata Catalyst and for the NHLBI data science ecosystem, that it's really optimized for reuse in the long term.
Okay, and RTI is?
Research Triangle Institute,
I believe.
There
you go. Yeah. Thank you. we have a bunch more, but anyone want to jump in just on the data standards piece, or should I go to another question? I think I have three more, and we're pushing up against the clock. Not that we can't go over. Cater.
I mean, we use X12, HL7. I mean, yeah, we use as many standards as possible. We're kind of in the same that same area, but we do not have a contract that standardizes our data.
For us, actually, no. We obviously don't work on standard, but from the data office is actually how could I create harmonization platform, and that can map to like a future looking, right? That could map to the standard or whatever the standard next coming. And that's another area we are looking to AI also.
We have another question. Stand up and tell them who you are.
Good morning, Angela Kerrigan with Leidos. In industry, really our goal is to have a solution ready when you need it, right? So, and we use data information to do that, to have it ready. So like Sweta, you'd mentioned you listen to the community, you have your researcher use cases, and then that you know, informs your development cycle. So in industry, do you have tips for us in terms of where we should be looking, other than RFPs coming out, where we should be looking for that data, that information that tells us what your priorities are, what your solutions are? Is it strategic plans that are, you know, 5 years in the making, or, you know, any tips for us so that we can be prepared?
There are various institutes and the NIH OD as well. They're working on putting out more formal strategic plans for data science. And if they don't come out in 2024, then they'll be coming out, you know, soon after. So that's something to look out for, because there is an increased emphasis on data science at the NIH and I think at HHS overall. But, you know, I know people hate this answer, but look for the RFIs that are coming out, because that's really going to guide where things are going. There was one that NHLBI, it just closed yesterday, unfortunately, but it was on artificial intelligence and really looking to the community for what's out there, what's happening, because a lot of what's happening and what's available is, you know, can pique interest, you know, across the various institutes and centers at the NIH. Helps us understand what's out there to guide development as well, and perhaps create new opportunities. So I would, you know, definitely look for those. NIH has the new term, it's called NOFO. It's the Notice of Funding something. I don't know what the other O.
Opportunity.
Opportunity, there you go, NOFO. It used to be like a NOCI or something like that. But yeah, look out for those NOFOs as well, because I know that there's some that are gonna hit the street soon in terms of data science and AI. So, you know, those are coming. But I think that, you know, all across, you know, Catherine and I were talking about this just before. You know, the problems that we're facing in HHS are not unique to HHS. You know, data problems exist trans-industry. You know, whether you're talking about financial or automotive or whatever, the data, the issues are consistent. It's just different use cases. And so you don't really need to look to see what HHS is, you know, doing. I think it's just understanding what are the challenges in data. Yes, there are unique things to data across HHS because we're looking at, you know, human data, really, right? But taking those into consideration, you know, what are the challenges out there? What are the opportunities? Because it's not unique. I think, you know, we're all facing those challenges.
That's all the time we have for today. You just heard an excerpt from the recent panel discussion on health IT and data that I moderated for FC at Bethesda. My guests on that panel were Sweta Ladwa, the chief of the Scientific Solutions Delivery Branch at the National Institutes of Health, Kate Weatherby, the acting director for the Marketplace Innovation Technology Group at the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, and Neelu Kundagrami, the chief data officer for the Advanced Research Project Agency Health in the Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Jason Miller, and you've been listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Network.
You've been listening to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Network. Tune in Thursday mornings at 10 or subscribe to this show on iTunes or Podcast One.